Hey, good evening, podcasters. Talking to you here from the great state of North Carolina. And I'm joined by a, what Caller Lab termed once was a legend in our activity, Jerry Junk out of Wayne, Nebraska. Jerry, good evening.
Good evening. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, until I see you here on this computer screen and you see me back and forth, I think maybe we were at the same Caller Lab convention in Norfolk in probably, what was that, 2016? But I don't know if we run into each other there. But anyway.
I don't remember meeting you. I didn't recognize your name, but I was in Norfolk.
Yeah, well, it was a good convention. I had a good time there, that's for sure. A lot of people here in my area may not know Jerry Junk. Can you give me a brief background?
Well, I have called in the North Carolina area and in the Carolinas, called with Jerry Biggerstaff, and I can't think of the other guy's name right off the top of my head, but I have been out in that area. But I live in Wayne, Nebraska. I grew up in a little town of Carroll, Nebraska, on a farm. And Northeast Nebraska has always been my home. I started calling in 1966 as a senior in high school. That was 54 years ago.
Wow. Have you ever once regretted the decision to become a Square Dance caller?
Oh, no, not ever.
Never.
And even to be a full-time caller, I've thoroughly enjoyed that. I've been a full-time caller since 1985. The only time that doesn't work if something flies apart at home, if you've got medical issues with family and stuff like that, then that becomes more difficult. But other than that, no, I have no regrets.
Wow. I watched the Legends interview that was done on 2019 on Caller Lab, and I found out a bit of information about you on there, that you're a Caller Lab accredited caller coach. And you know, it seems to be that my podcasts have migrated to get Caller Lab accredited coaches on here, and chairman of the board of Caller Labs, and that's another thing that seems to be happening. Tell me a little bit about what Caller Lab means to you and what it means to the Square Dance activity for our dancers.
Well, Caller Lab really started out, it has stabilized our activity. Bob Osgood, I've always attributed him to be the most visionary caller I ever knew. And he had Sets in Order magazine. And in the late 60s, early 70s, Bob realized that you could not travel from state to state or even regionally in areas because they all danced a different set of calls. And he decided we needed to have some stability in what we called. And he started Caller Lab with that intent, was so that you could call, if you lived in Wyoming, you could call in New England. If you lived in New England, you could call in California. That was the original purpose of it. And to do that, Bob, in the Sets in Order magazine, had a group of callers that he had put in as his Hall of Fame. He took those callers to start the organization. They had the influence to convince people to join.
Nice. I'm going to ask you, I probably already know the answer. What person or caller influenced your career the most? Do you have one, or is it a series of people?
It would be a number of people. When I first started calling, there was as a kid, there was a guy moved into our area by the name of Dennis Kelly. He had a real passion for calling, and he had some of the best rhythm of anyone I ever knew. Became a very good friend, taught me a lot about, not only about calling, but about people, and that there was more to the calling than calling, that it was the people that was important. And when you get to the professional callers, there were a number of them. Marshall Flippo was number one. Gary Shoemake, I always admired what he did when I was learning to call. I really, really followed him.
Nice. Has any Square Dance caller or dancer ever played a prank on you?
Oh, yes. There have been a number of them. Gary Shoemake comes right to the top of the list.
No way.
Oh, yes.
What did he do to you? Can you tell me?
Well, yeah. We went to Detroit for the national convention a few years ago. And when I flew out of Omaha to go to Detroit, my plane was canceled. And they put me on a different plane and assured me my luggage would get there. Well, I arrived on Wednesday night and my luggage did not arrive with me. So I knew that it would be there on Thursday morning. It always works that way. Thursday morning, my luggage was not there. And I was still in my blue jeans and a shirt like this and a light coat. So I called Thursday dressed that way. But Friday morning, my clothes were not there yet. So I was still wearing the same underwear. And Shoemaker told me to come down to the room and they'd help me out. So he gave me underwear and Ken Bauer gave me a shirt and a jacket. And man, I was looking pretty good. But I knew Saturday morning my clothes would be there. They were not. So I went down and returned the dirty underwear and the dirty shirt and got new underwear and a new shirt from Ken and Gary. And that night when we were calling in the live music hall, they called just behind me. And I was walking down the stairs and Gary said, "Take a look at Jerry Jock. Doesn't he look good?" Everybody kind of looked at me. He said, "But he doesn't have enough money for clothes. That's our clothes he's wearing. It's Bauer's shirt, Bauer's court, my underwear. So we're taking up a collection for Jerry Junk. Pennies only." I cannot tell you how many pennies I received the last night of that convention and even in the mail later on.
Wow. That sounds like Shoe. Sounds it like is. Something he would be right in the middle of, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. He's yeah. caused me a lot of misery over the years. And I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Sure. Did you ever take an opportunity to get even with him?
Well, no. And maybe the penny thing was a result of something that happened to him. When he was in Mesa, Arizona with me for a few years, and one night coming back from California, he got stopped for going a little too fast through California. Told me about it, and I told everybody the next morning, well, it slipped out that he'd had trouble with authority. And I said, you know, we're going to take up a collection for Gary's fine, pennies only. And that might have come back to haunt me on the phone.
I don't doubt it. Being that we've had a lot of downtime with this virus thing, have you had a chance to do anything you may have had on a bucket list you've had to postpone?
Well, I tell you, one of the things that I've done that I've really enjoyed, my dad's dad, my grandfather, I've never done a lot of research on our history, on our ancestry. And I've spent a good share of the summer researching the junk side of the family, going back to my grandfather and my great-great-grandfather, and we traced us all the way back to coming to the United States in 1768 before the Revolutionary War.
Nice.
And my great-great-grandfather was in the Civil War for 3 years, and I managed to find his grave in Illinois and stuff. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing, and I've had a good time with it.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Do you have any other hobbies outside of square dancing? Do you like to go fishing? Do you go boating? What if you come to my house and said, "Marty, I want to go do," what would it be?
I'd probably go play golf. I play very poorly, but I do enjoy it.
Well, you sound like you're right in the same league with Shoemaker.
Well, yeah, but he usually beats me about 2 or 3 strokes every time.
Yeah, well, I can't help you there. He tells me that Steve Kottman's a lost cause with golf. So you probably, if you're gonna play golf with anybody, you may want to choose Steve versus Shu for sure.
I like to play with Shu. We have a good time.
Yeah, he's always been good to me. I just consider him like my grandfather. It's all good. You mentioned on the Legends thing that was on for Caller Lab that you had a very special relationship from a caller in Texas. Can you tell me about Flippo?
Marshall Flippo, yeah. He is My definition of Marshall Flippo is he was the most uncommon, common man I ever knew, and was one of the best friends I ever had the luxury of having. And I met him briefly in 1976 at a Caller Lab convention. Over the years, I met him off and on, went to a few of his dances, not a lot of them. And then in 1991, he invited me to Kirkwood Lodge. And for the next 25 years, I worked Kirkwood Lodge, a week at Kirkwood Lodge every year with Flip. And he became one of the dearest friends I've ever had. And I learned a lot from Flip. I really learned a lot from him. Had a lot of fun with him. And over those 25 years, I'm sure other guys told you the same thing, that almost every week you got to talk to Flippo, and it was just something you look forward to.
Yeah, your name come up for to do a podcast from somebody who said he was very close to Flippo, and that was Daryl Lipscomb out of Mission, Texas. Mm-hmm. Daryl said that Flip called him about every week.
Yeah, Flip called. Flip and I talked, I'm sure, every week for probably 25 years.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah. And that brings me to something that I've always said during the podcast is this, that we have a real good relationship as friends with our dancers, but it's actually to another level. And I hate to tell this to the dancers, but with callers, we have a real brotherhood as well. We truly do.
Oh, absolutely. And even if you don't get to see the guys all that often, there are guys that are just, you just consider true friends. You asked about Flippo. Years ago, I found something in a book or a magazine when I was flying on a plane. It said certain people come into your lives and you're never the same. Flippo was one of those people. When he came into your life, you were never the same.
Amazing. Tell me your favorite Flippo story. Keep it clean.
Well, I'll tell you one that happened at a Color Lab convention. He was doing a seminar, I don't remember what for, early on, and he was with Ken and Gary, Ken Bauer and Gary Shoemake, and I think Jerry Haig. But at the end of the seminar, Gary asked if there were any questions. And a lady at the back of the room covered her badge up, stood up, started walking down the aisle, and said, "I would like to know how Marshall Flippo knows everybody's name all the time." And the guys on the stage kind of looked at each other and shrugged their shoulders. They had no idea who this woman was. She got right up to the podium in front of Flippo, and she said, "Now, Flippo, just how do you know everybody all the time?" And without cracking a smile or anything, he said, "Ramada Inn, room 232. And everybody fell on the floor, including the lady. She loved it. Oh, that was Flippo.
That is him. That is him. One of the highlights that I had at the convention in Norfolk was when Flippo got up and did his bit. Classic Marshall. And
only he can do that.
Oh, he can get away with it.
Oh, yeah. Only he could do that.
Oh, it was. And I remember some of it, but I can't even repeat it now. And that was in front of the general public. That's for sure.
Oh, no. You got to keep it clean around Flip. It's not always easy to do.
Oh, wow. One thing about Flip is this, that when I was down to Daryl Lipscomb's down in Mission, Texas, I asked Daryl, I says, "Who could I get to do a podcast that would be very, very interesting?" He says, "Well," he says, "I'll tell you what." He says, "How would you like to get John Flippo, Marshall's son, to do one of the podcasts?" I said, "I'd love it." So Daryl called up Shelley, John's wife, and says, "I don't think he'll do it. There's no chance, no way he'll do it." But Daryl says, "Have him call me." So when John got home, he called him, and Daryl convinced John Flippo to do a podcast. One of the most listened to podcasts of my series, and it really was a nice tribute to his dad. And during that time, he told me there was a lady writing a book about the life of Marshall Flippo. And just two or three days ago, I got an email from John Flippo stating that the book has been released. So I sent you the link to it. I don't know if you've had a chance to open it up yet or not. And I do know that you had the honor of doing something very special in conjunction with that book. Will you fill the people in what you were asked to do?
Well, I was asked to contribute a foreword to it of some type. And I think what I wrote, I don't remember right off the top of my head, but I think I wrote that what I just said a little bit ago, Flippo was the most uncommon, common man I ever met.
Nice.
Yeah. Loretta Horner Miller is the lady that wrote the book. And yeah, it is out. She sent me an email today that it is available.
Awesome. Well, to my podcasters, if you are not familiar with The Legend of Marshall Flippo, I'm sure that the book is a good read. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but along with the notification that this podcast has come out, you'll get a separate link with the email, Amazon link to the book called Just Another Caller, Just Another Square Dance Caller, and it's the life and times of the autobiography, authorized biography of Marshall Flippo. I recommend you take a look at it. And I'm going to send a copy of this particular podcast to John Flippo so he can see that he owes me $100 for the plug.
Good enough.
Right now, we are in a very difficult time for square dancing, and it's pretty much non-existent. What do you see as the future of square dancing, and what do you expect next, Jerry?
Well, I honestly think we've pretty much lost 2020. The pandemic has just ended dancing for all intents and purposes. There are a few groups, I guess, that are dancing. But common sense-wise, I think we have to just wait this out. I'm not the negative guy, some guys are. Square dancing will come back. We will start dancing again, and there are going to be a lot of people looking for it. I do think we will lose some people who have been away from the activity for a while. They'll find something else to do. But I think it gives us a chance to have a rebirth as well. So that's kind of what I look at.
Nice. Can you compare the feeling of training a dancer to that of training a caller? Is there parallels? Can you give me a contrast of what it means to you to do both of those?
Well, there are parallels in the fact that if you can reach both of them, if you can get them to understand what you're presenting, you will see a light in their eyes light up when they've got it. And there's a big reward in that. You can tell when a dancer understands that call, the confidence that it gives them. Same way when you're teaching a new caller, if they understand what you tried to present, what you tried to get them to do, and if they can do it successfully, you'll see that in their eyes that, okay, I've got it. And there's a reward in that.
Oh, nice. One thing about Caller Lab is they have different programs, or some people call them levels. Do you have one that you prefer to call more than another?
I prefer mainstream and plus. I do advanced, but mainstream and plus, and I actually enjoy mainstream. I really do. Here in the Midwest where I live, mainstream is king. This is what we call here. I think there's only one plus club in the state of Nebraska, to my knowledge.
Wow. Amazing. And here in the Carolinas, it's almost the opposite. We're almost top heavy and advanced and then in plus for sure, but mainstream is pretty much, I've got a club that dances mainstream mostly with one plus tip, but that's very few and far between around here.
Yeah. Well, the East Coast is that way. The West Coast is that way. And some of the areas in the South, but through the Midwest here, everybody dances mainstream. Most of the clubs dance mainstream, and they may dance a plus tip somewhere along the line.
And I'll tell you, as far as calling goes, a lot of callers feel that if they don't call advanced, they're really not a caller. But I'll tell you, to do a very creative mainstream level dance that keeps the dancers engaged is probably more difficult and more challenging than just calling advanced.
Well, yeah, you have a lot less that you can use, and I always maintain when I tell callers or teach callers, it isn't what you call, it's how you call it. You're going to use the same calls they are. how you present them. It isn't what you call, it's how you called it.
That's true. I know also you've been recording since, what, 1985 or so?
Yes.
And do you have a favorite singing call that you've done?
Ooh. Oh, wow. If you go back to the early days, Fire on the Mountain that I had with Hoedowner Records with Daryl Clendenin, that would be one of my favorites. Man. Just run them off the top of my head. If I want to go back a ways, that Fire on the Mountain would be top of the line with me. I was trying to think of some others that I've done. And I'm drawing a blank. I apologize.
That's quite all right. Well, my podcasters already know that you have not been presented any of these questions. It's all off the cuff, and that's the way I like to keep it. So it's so we have to think a little bit and keeps our mind sharp. What's your favorite food? What do you like to eat?
I'm eating bacon and potato, and I'm just fine.
I'm sorry, answer got muffled a little bit with the internet connection. What was that answer?
Okay, I'm a meat and potatoes guy. Steak and a baked potato just about sets me up any way I want to go.
There you go. Awesome. Have you traveled internationally calling?
Only to Canada. I've not been overseas. I've called in Canada, and I've called on cruise ships in the Caribbean, but I've never been to Australia, Japan, or to Europe.
Me neither. I'd like to, but I don't know as I want to go there now. That's for sure.
I do enjoy Canada. I very much enjoy calling Canada.
Nice. That brings me to a point, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you had a tour set up and you started in Nebraska, and where would you want to go and to which areas and where would you come back to?
Well, I don't have a special area. Because I work to resorts in Mesa, Arizona, in the summertime, I travel from April through October, and I try to work the upper tier estates from just east of the Mississippi River west and to the north, because those are the people that come to Mesa. That advertises my Mesa program.
Nice.
I do go to Texas, and I have called in the Northeast, and I have called in the Southeast. But when I started calling in Mesa, that takes 5 months out of your travel time, and it's difficult to get to everywhere in 7 months' time.
Oh, sure, sure. Awesome, awesome. Do you have any other callers you might suggest to do a podcast for me?
Let me think about that.
All right.
Buddy Weaver out of California.
All right.
San Diego.
Now, what often happens, I'll send emails out to callers, and I try to follow it up with a phone call. And without Daryl Lipscomb's input with John Flippo, I probably never would have got him. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to reach out to Buddy and see if he'll do an interview with me. And if not, I may get back in touch with you so you jingle his chain a little bit so we can get Buddy online and do – because I know he's a music producer and he's a real good guy. So I do know that he would probably be a very good one to do. How would anybody get a hold of you when Square Dancing opens back up again to have Jerry Junk call a dance for him?
Well, you can go to my website, just type my name in, Jerry Junk, or you can call me. I'm in the phone book, and my email address is my last name, junk@AOL.com.
Okay, now, they may not want to put the C in there, so it's junck@AOL.com?
Yes, it is. J-U-N-C-K.
Very good, very good. Do you have any final thoughts that you would like to share with the Square Dance community? Or, well, tell you what, let's end up with another one. I know you must have at least another Marshall Flippo story in your pocket. I know you got to have another
one. Oh, man, Marshall Flippo. Well, I do. When as he got older, he was in Tucson, Arizona in the wintertime. And as he got older, he wasn't the best driver anymore. So Gary Shoemake and I always worried about him driving back from Mesa if he was up there. And we would take turns talking with him on the phone to make sure he got back to Tucson without falling asleep. One night, Gary called me while I was watching the sports after our dances and said, "Don't go to sleep. Flipple just got pulled over." And I said, "Oh, good, I'll wait." So when Gary called back, sure enough, Flipple had gone through a construction zone talking to Gary on the phone. Evidently did not speed up after he had gotten through the construction zone, and a policeman pulled him over. And then after he did that, you have to have a reason to pull an 80-something-year-old guy over. So he rode him up for more than 15 miles an hour under the speed limit.
That is amazing.
Yeah, the next morning when I called Flippo, it was a movie by that time. It was pretty good.
Oh, I bet. That's the kind of stuff. That's one reason I love to do these podcasts, because that is square dance history that you knew about that is going to go worldwide now. Right now I'm in, I think, 20 countries around the world. I'm on 5 or 6 continents, and I lack all but 2 states in the U.S. So the story about Flippo getting pulled over because he was going too slow will make it around the world. That is for sure. Do you have any final comments for the square dance population?
Well, we're going to have to wait this pandemic out. I hate it. I love to call, and I'm missing calling. I'll be honest with you, I'm missing the dancers more. I'm missing people.
With you.
Even more than I thought I would. And I really look forward to the time when we can get back to dancing and get back to the friendships. And I would hope that we would realize that choreography is fine, but our friendships and our being able to socialize is far more important, and that we need to think about entertaining maybe more than trying to put out so much choreography.
Absolutely. Jerry, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I don't know as I'll call you every week like Flippo did, but you might hear from me now and then. So
well, it's nice to meet you. Nice to see you. I appreciate being invited to join you, and thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate your time. For the people who don't know, we tried to do this earlier in the afternoon using a different program, and we weren't very successful. And Jerry says, "Well, maybe we could do it tomorrow." And I says, "Yeah, I don't know about that." He says, "How about tonight?" So we got on a different program, and here we are. So, Jerry, I'll send you out the link to this. It'll probably go out to you tomorrow. And if you do me a favor, if you have a Facebook page or some social networking where you can help me grow the views and the listenership of my podcast, I'd greatly appreciate it. And let's hope that the people go to junck@aol.com and maybe, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Junk@aol.com. And maybe they'll put you in at a dance, because I think that they would have a really good time. I've listened to some of your stuff. And if you're looking for a caller that's got a lot of experience and will treat you right, Jerry Junk might be your man. Jerry, thanks for your time.
Marty, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks. Take care.